This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
There are things we don't know yet about the killing of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia. And as in any trial, the suspects are entitled to the presumption of innocence, but this much seems beyond question. Two white men, one armed with a shotgun, went in pursuit of a black man who was jogging. They later told police that they suspected him of some break-ins in the neighborhood. There was some type of interaction, and Travis McMichael shot and killed Ahmaud Arbery. But local prosecutors didn't see the shooting as a crime. They didn't arrest McMichael and his father, Greg, for more than 2 months. To understand the laws and the mindset that make such a thing possible, The New Yorker's Jelani Cobb turned last week to Ira P. Robbins. Robbins is a professor at the Law School of American University, and he's co-director of the Criminal Justice Practice and Policy Institute. Here's Jelani Cobb with Ira P. Robbins.
You know, Mr. Barnhill, the second prosecutor who later recused himself, wrote a letter to the police department, the local police department, saying it appears that here he's referencing the McMichaels, their intent was to stop and hold this criminal suspect until law enforcement arrived. Under Georgia law, this is perfectly legal. Does the statute explicitly allow for pursuit, and under what circumstances?
Well, I'll answer that, but add another layer. So when the McMichaels were pursuing Mr. Arbery, thinking they had the right to make a citizen's arrest because they think that Mr. Arbery was committing a crime in that dwelling under construction, I guarantee you the McMichaels had no idea whether the crime being committed was a felony or a misdemeanor. In fact, in the police report, it says two crimes. It mentions two crimes. One is homicide, and the other is criminal trespass. Well, if it's criminal trespass, that's a misdemeanor, and in citizens' arrest law, the arrestors would have fewer rights. If it was a burglary that Mr. Arbery was committing, that would be a felony, and the citizens' arrest law would allow greater leeway to the citizens.
So with that in mind, was it surprising to you that the prosecutor, actually two prosecutors, looked at the situation and concluded that it was a valid citizen's arrest?
That conclusion indicates to me either that they don't know anything about the law of citizen's arrest, or they are confusing citizen's arrest with self-defense and stand your ground laws.
Could you sort those things out for us?
Sure. So under the citizen's arrest law, basically a person can hold an offender or suspected offender until the police arrive. Basically, it's their job to operate as witnesses, not to be a substitute for the police, not to take the law into their own hands. You add to that, though, that not all suspected offenders are willing to be arrested. And if an altercation ensues, then it may be that the arrester and the suspect get into some situation involving use of force, and then we get into self-defense, which is a complicated area of the law, even without issues of stand your ground. Ordinary self-defense law has a duty to retreat, with certain exceptions. Mm-hmm. The Stand Your Ground law in Georgia eliminates the duty to retreat. So this case, in my opinion, stands or falls on whether the initial citizen's arrest confrontation was proper in the first place.
So we've seen, you know, the Stand Your Ground laws that really entered our consciousness around the case of Trayvon Martin, who was a teenager, 17 years old, who was shot by a neighborhood watchman by the name of George Zimmerman in Florida. And, you know, this kind of thing, I think this alerted the public to the fact that there were so many jurisdictions that had these laws. And now we're seeing a similar conversation beginning to take place around citizens' arrests and the Ahmaud Arbery case. Is there any connection in your mind behind why we see such inflammatory situations, specifically around the lines of race, with these doctrines?
Wonderful question. It seems to me what we're seeing here is a deadly combination of the law of citizens' arrest, flawed self-defense laws, particularly when we have a stand-your-ground doctrine, as we do in Georgia, and arguably racial profiling as well. It may be that when the McMichaels raised this idea of stand-your-ground and self-defense built on citizens' arrest, the whole thing is a pretext for what starts out as racial profiling. And I would argue that they should have stayed in the truck. I mean, we've seen the video. Greg McMichael was on the phone with the police, who arrived certainly within a minute or so, perhaps less than a minute, of the shooting. The role of a citizen in a citizen's arrest is to operate as a witness. It's not as if they had information that Mr. Arbery was escaping from a major felony, a bank robbery, a homicide, or even a burglary. There was no burglary here. If this was a burglary, perhaps there would have been a right to a citizen's arrest. But since this was only a criminal trespass, no such right. And if there is no such right to do a citizen's arrest here, then when Travis McMichael confronted Mr. Arbery and started the altercation, it seems to me that Travis McMichael was the initial aggressor and as such loses the right to self-defense.
Another thing that made this case stand out to me was that, you know, the offense that started the entire pursuit, at least according to the McMichaels, was his presence on the property or on the grounds of a house that was under construction. And, you know, just a few months ago, before the COVID lockdowns began, I was visiting friends in Atlanta and I went for a walk. There's lots of new construction in the neighborhood, and I saw a house that was under construction, and I thought, I wonder what the floor plan is for this place. And I didn't go inside, but I walked kind of up onto where the lawn would be and was looking around. I was like, oh, they're putting a staircase over here and a deck over there. And it was just a kind of interesting observation I made while walking through the neighborhood and continued walking. And the idea that that could be provocation for an armed pursuit was unnerving and shocking to me at the least.
I agree with you. And it seems to me that people don't know what the law is. Especially a law that doesn't get a lot of attention, like citizens' arrest law. So when somebody does something that even reasonable people might do, even if it might be a very minor crime like criminal trespass, going onto someone's property when you don't have a right to be there, that doesn't justify detaining someone, using force, unreasonable force, and causing a death. If that part of this whole situation falls, as I think it should, then any defense the McMichaels are raising, I think, would fall like a house of cards. The foundation, the citizen's arrest, is not a good foundation.
You've looked at lots of cases of citizens' arrests and attempted citizens' arrests. These laws have created lots of problems and lots of situations that seem to be on the face very difficult and troubling. Why do they stay on the books?
A lot of laws whose time has passed stay on the books only because the legislature has not gotten around to repealing them. Or they think, well, maybe it's got these laws have some purpose that we don't presently see. So let's just leave them on the books and hope for the best. But when you see abuses like this, when you see unreasonable use of deadly force, officials have to stand up and pay attention, because if we don't do something about it after such an obvious abuse in this case, then we're going to see many more abuses in the future. We don't want citizens' arrest to become a pretext for an unfortunate end to situations that start with racial profiling. We want organized police forces where the members of the police force have been trained to deal with offenders. We don't want ordinary people to take the law into their own hands.
Ira P. Robbins is a law professor and co-director of the Criminal Justice Practice and Policy Institute at American University's Washington College of Law. He spoke with Jelani Cobb, a staff writer at The New Yorker.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.